Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We have a long way to go defensively. If we was at our best defensively and they was tagging us like this, then it'd be red alert. So we got to continue to get our coverages down, our communication down. And that's just in half court. That ain't even talking about transition, which, you know, last night we gave up, I think, 30 points of transition. That last year in Miami when we went to the final, I don't know how we made it. As a team, we was kind of like this. It was worse because we were new guys. It was guys that had been around each other 4 years in a row. Guys was just over you. It's like being in a bad marriage. We somehow made it to the finals, and Indiana should have beat us that year.
We're talking about an individual that was gone before, and after receiving banishment, was allowed to come back, and then before the season began, had to reinstate himself into a rehab clinic because of these issues. Anything that will help the guy, I'm supportive of, but he's had these issues on the books since 2012. He hasn't played in the game since 2014. In the time that he's been away from the Cleveland Browns, they've been 4-37. He's wrecked this franchise, and it comes down to reliability, dependability, and he hasn't been available. It's conditional for a reason.
You know, it's tough, man. These Thursday night games, they throw a wrench in our schedule. It's absolutely ridiculous that we have to do this. As physical as this game is, and as much work and preparation that goes into this to force us to play games on 4 day weeks, it's completely unfair. The league makes money off of it. That's all they care about anyway.
Obviously a devastating blow to a city that now, in the span of 24 hours, celebrated its first World Series championship and now loses the quarterback who was leading the NFL in touchdown passes, who had brought a jolt of energy to the NFL, who had provided a distraction in a year where the NFL needed one. A player who not only was competing for the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year, but also, I think you can make the argument, could have been the MVP.
He's seeking an injunction, and he's also seeking an expedited hearing in front of a 3-judge panel, the appellate court, to basically try to overturn what that district court did. So this essentially pushes it to next week, pushes that motion for an injunction and also that request for that expedited hearing to this 3-judge panel. They'll hear this case, but now the timing becomes interesting because, yes, he plays this weekend, but the question becomes, what does this appellate court do next week?
Sometimes injuries can be self-induced, not by Andrew Luck, but by the coach. They've surrounded this young man by a miserable offensive line, by pretty much a terrible supporting cast. The number one thing in football you do, when you get a franchise quarterback, when you get Aaron Rodgers, when you get Tom Brady, you surround them with players. They've not done that with Andrew Luck. And so in my opinion, yeah, it can be bad luck, but a lot of it can be self-induced by the organization for the lack of support they've put around this young man.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza. Thanks so much for joining us. What is going on? Hope you're having an outstanding Friday afternoon. It's what we like to call free-for-all Friday around here. When we get into one topic and then another and then another and then another at any kind of order, because we don't have any order with the exception of today. Because we do have a number of guests coming on today to help me get through the day. I apologize. It's not your phone or your, you could be listening through your phone. It's not your phone. It's not your radio. It's not your speakers. It is my voice that sounds like sandpaper. So apologies for that. Working through it. Long day on the radio today and a little bit of sickness coming in with the change of temperature as it got so cold and then it's getting a little more mild and. Well, you know how that goes. You don't care about my woes. Just wanted you to know why it sounds as garbagey as it does. It's not the station. It's not you. It's me. So thanks for being with us. Jim Cushlin is here as well. You might hear his voice a little more today than you normally do. Apologies for that in advance because Cush is going to be my go-to guy if and when the voice starts to fail. What's going on, Cush?
Oh, not too much on that front. I hope you do eventually feel better. I will say, yes, they will get a lot of me, not just helping you out. I'm also in for Mike Miller, incidentally, later on Drive Time as well. So, yeah, you might hear a little more of me at times
all
today.
All Cush, all the time.
Oh, yeah.
On WKUSH. All right, now I'm just messing. Okay, so a lot of stuff to unpack in that montage there today. Let me tell you what's coming up guest-wise on the program. First of all, we will have another pair of Joe Bonamassa tickets to give away. You just heard the promo for that before we came on the air. We'll have that probably somewhere in the second hour of the program. I would guess probably in the first half hour of the second hour of the program. Guest-wise, you heard a little bit in the montage there from Dwayne Wade about the Cavaliers issues. As we kind of start to focus a little more on basketball now, I think, since the baseball season has ended, they're having a parade, even as we speak, in downtown Houston. That started at 2 o'clock. Well, actually, it started 10 minutes ago. It started at 2 o'clock Central Time, Houston time. And so that's now. It's 3 o'clock our time. So they just got their championship parade started there. By the way, Kush, if you were Justin Verlander and you had been planning your wedding in Italy for weeks and months now, and then you found out that your wedding was on the weekend of the only championship parade you ever had in your life, would you go to Italy a little bit late and make sure you're there for the parade today, or would you skip the parade and be in Tuscany right now preparing for tomorrow's ceremony?
Oh, man. Well, I'm also not getting married to Kate Upton, so that's an extra facet of this. I can imagine if he skips it, it goes to the parade. Either way, it'll probably be all over the TMZs of the world later.
There's no doubt.
Oh, that's a tough call. I'd probably have to say I'd go to the parade, but then again, I'm not married Kate Upton.
See, Kate
so.
Upton, but Kate Upton is in her own right. She is a celebrity. She knows what it's like. She also knows that her husband to be, and they've been engaged for a long time.
Yeah,
that her husband to be has been working for this moment his entire life to win a championship. He's never won one before. He's come close. He's had all the personal accolades with Cy Youngs and MVPs, but he's never won a world championship, and he finally won one. And the crowning moment to celebrate with your teammates and fans, especially because you won it on the road, you didn't win it in front of those fans, so you didn't get to have that night of celebratory cheer with the fans in your city, which is now his city is Houston, not Detroit. Sorry about that, Tiger fans. It is what it is. I feel like she would understand, and I also feel like even if they had to push things back by a few hours tomorrow, they have the resources to do it.
That's very true.
When you make $25 million a year and you are worth hundreds of millions because of what you've done over the course of your career, and your girlfriend or fiance is also worth millions because of her modeling career, you could probably call the caterer, the church, the everything there is in Tuscany that they're going to do for their immaculate wedding and say, hey, instead of noon, yeah, we're going to be doing that at about 5 because we're going to fly in a little late. We got a championship parade to celebrate. That's just what I'm thinking.
And I'm thinking that might be what ends up happening, though I base that on absolutely nothing except speculation. But I would probably take that route. That seems like a fair compromise that I think even Kate could get behind. After all, you know, you mentioned the celebrity part, but how many times have we seen her in the stands and everything? So, heck, she might be on the float with Justin for all we know.
I have no doubt she would be, right? I mean, a lot of times significant others or kids go on the floats with them. When the Cavaliers had their championship parade a couple of years ago, weren't there like significant others and other kids and stuff like that a part of being on the floats? I think there were.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Even Ernest Biner was allowed to get on one of the floats, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there you go. So I'm sure she would be, and I'm sure they would be perfectly fine. I doubt that any of Justin's teammates would object to having Kate nearby. So just as
I want to know the ones who would, by the way.
What's that?
I would want to know the ones who would object to that.
Yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, right. I'm sure they would say, "Come on aboard. We'd love to have you." It would just class up our pictures a little bit more.
There you go.
Having your pictures taken. Anyway, so that's going on today. The point is baseball is now over, and so we're going to focus on a little bit more basketball. And today we're going to talk to Rick Nolan coming up at 3:35 about the Cavaliers' ongoing struggles this early part of the season. We do know that, again, you know, it's kind of weird that we have to keep saying it, but we do know that this is something that is not going to impact them at playoff time come April or May or whenever the season ends, because it is so very early. But, you know, it continues. It's not something that is ending on a moment's notice either. This is a problem. It's a big problem at the moment. And you heard Dwayne Wade say, you know what, this reminds me of how we were in 2014. Somehow we made the finals. We shouldn't have. Indiana should have beat us. But we did. And I don't know how we did it. He said, and what's even weirder is we weren't all new. We all knew each other then. It was just weird. It's kind of like a bad marriage. Sometimes it just goes south at a certain point in time.
Yeah, and he even acknowledged that that's basically the only difference, at least partial excuse maybe for this squad, is all the new faces and the couple of injuries which are now mounting. And of course is more than just, you know, Isaiah Thomas. Tristan Thompson's going to be out for basically the next month, which will hurt them at times. So that's about the only difference I can see is as Wade pointed out. Yeah, that squad, they all knew each other, and the jokes weren't funny is one of the lines he used. This one, at least there's that sort of excuse that there are a ton of new guys on this team.
Right, exactly. But you know, that was a team that lost in the finals, obviously.
Yep.
And he's kind of comparing this team to a team that didn't reach its ultimate goal, and you know, at this stage anyway. So it's worth talking about. Why is that? So we're going to talk to Rick Nolan about that. He covers the Cavaliers on their beat at about 3:35 today. Then at 4:10, all kinds of issues regarding the National Football League. Adam Stites from SB Nation NFL will be joining us to talk about some of those, as we will in just a moment. And then at 4:40, of course, it is the first round of the high school football playoffs in Ohio. It'll be round two up there in Michigan. But we're going to talk about most of the Ohio games, including Central Catholic. It's really largely... Northwest Ohio versus Northeast Ohio, Jim.
I've noticed that's how the regions are, yeah.
Whitmer is going to take on Lorain, which is in Northeast Ohio, out in Lorain County. You have Central taking on
Glenville,
which is east side of Cleveland,
yep.
So even further out that way. Then you have who is playing Avon?
St. John's.
That's right. Toledo St. John's is taking on Avon, which is another Lorain County team out there, not too far from Lorain. So it's a lot of that in Northeast versus Northwest Ohio, depending on which team has the higher seed as to where those games are.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill Clark will break those down. But Jim, I want to start with a couple of these NFL topics,
yes,
that we're going to get into with Adam Stites, and because I didn't get a chance to do this yesterday, and I'm having a bit of a problem with my audio sound bites here, but I was hoping to play the comments yesterday, and you played some from Stephen A. Smith on Josh Gordon being reinstated,
right,
in the Browns a couple of days ago, but it's not his comments that I found the most interesting. The comments that, and I think it matters a little bit because this guy was in the league, and I'm talking about Burger McFarland, who was in hosting for one of the mics, as he often is. And he's the one who came out and really took Josh Gordon to task on this and said, not just from the standpoint of it's not a good environment for a guy who hasn't proven that his life is turned around, that he's clean and sober, that it's the kind of thing that could lead to him relapsing. He needs more time away from the game. Show me for a long period of time, and I'm not saying 5 years, but whatever the number is, that you are clean and that you can handle the situations like the National Football League that contributed to your addiction and contributed to your relapsing and so on and so forth. But he talked about it, did Booger, which, again, I apologize. I'd play for you if I could. But he talked about it from the standpoint of he doesn't deserve it. He said, look, this guy has had so many opportunities. We've got to stop talking. And Booger McFarland, paraphrasing this part of it, he said, we've got to stop talking about this being a second chance. Everybody deserves a second chance. Because when it comes, and I feel the same way. This is why I was more...
Yeah, we brought this angle of it up on this show many times.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a second chance when you've had it happen as many times as Josh Gordon has. You're going on a fifth or a sixth or a seventh chance or something of that nature. Let me see. I've been trying to make this work as I speak, Jim. I'm going to see if I was successful or not. Let me see if I can play Booger McFarland here.
The Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon has been granted a conditional reinstatement. He hasn't played since the 2014 season. If everything goes well between now and then, he can start practicing on November 20th. What do you think is a realistic expectation for Josh Gordon, who remains extraordinarily young? He's been around. His story is known for so long. People may perceive him to be a lot older than he is. He still has an entire career ahead of him if he can get things straight.
Anything he gives you to me is a plus. It's a bonus. Greeny, I look at this situation different than most because I don't think Josh Gordon should be in the National Football League. I think Josh Gordon has had so many opportunities going all the way back to his collegiate career. I mean, opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, and he's failed at all of them. And I think he needs to get his life together and prove that he can have his life together consistently, not just for a year at a time when you can go get back in front of the commissioner and say, hey, look what I've done in the last year. Prove that your life can be on the straight and narrow path for a long time. So although I want to be optimistic, I've been optimistic in the past before about him, and I've been let down. So hope he does well. Anything he gives you is a bonus.
Boom. Boom. That's exactly how I feel about it, and that's the point I was trying to make. And as you can hear, that's why I wanted to play Booger McFarland on this, because as he said, this man has been given opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. This isn't a second chance thing. This isn't like, well, he just messed up and boy, well, everybody deserves another shot. But he's had, you know, time and time and time again, and each time he comes back, Booger said, the way he phrased it, he lets me down because I've been hopeful for him. And Kush, as I've said many times on this program, if I was the general manager or the head coach or the offensive coordinator of the Browns over the, and I think there have been two or three of them since his, you know, his suspension and ban already.
Yeah, that's true.
But if I was, I wouldn't sign him and train him, with him and practice with him and then play him, because I feel like if I build my offense around him, which a talent like his is something you might want to do, and then I'm going to get burned again. Like Booger said, he lets me down. Well, then what happens when he lets down his quarterback, his coach, his GM, and everybody else? Because they have to go back to, damn it, now what? We thought we'd have something cooking here with Josh, and now Josh got popped again. Josh is gone again, and now we got to find another way to build this offense. So leaving a fan down like Booger, you know, Booger's a fan and an analyst now. Leaving a fan down is one thing. Leaving Browns fans, plural, down is another thing. But letting your teammates and your coaches and everybody down because they think, all right, Josh has finally got it together. My God, he's in phenomenal playing shape. By the way, that's the word now. We questioned this a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Apparently, he says he's in the best shape of his life. He's been working out very hard during this, you know, banishment. So we'll see. But he's in great shape, and all of this talent is there. Finally, something for Deshaun Kizer, and Deshaun gets working with him, and then suddenly he's gone again, and it just hurts more than it would have if he'd have just never had him back at all.
And there's a lot of truth to that. There absolutely is. You know, you have to weigh everything you just said into consideration. You absolutely have to, because with this guy and his track record and his history, it is entirely possible that that scenario that you just laid out, Bob, could end up happening again. The flip side to all that, and this is something I argued a little bit yesterday while I was in for Mike, because I did touch on this subject a little bit. Honestly, at this point in everything, the Browns are in no position to make demands. And what I mean by that is, with Joe Thomas out injured, if Josh Gordon were to step on the field, he immediately becomes the most talented player on the entire Browns roster.
No question.
He can only play for 5 games, and if I'm understanding how the contract and the rights and everything with the banishment works, if he steps out on the field this year, then when this season's over, he's a free agent and can end up going anywhere to anybody who may want to sign him. He's playing for his career on the one hand, and quite frankly, especially from a coaching staff point of view, I would hope that they would want anything they could possibly get to get a win or two, because we all know if they go 0-16, they're going to be all fired on January 2nd. They're coaching for their jobs, and they need everything they possibly can get. So if I'm the Browns at this stage, he can't even be eligible to play in a game until literally 1 month from today, I believe December 3rd, and the 5 December games to close out the season are the maximum he can play. And if I'm the Browns, I have to seriously look into this. Just because everything is as putrid and bad as it is, you need something. And Josh, for his own sake, can he get popped again? Sure, we've seen it happen seemingly 3-4 times after the second chance, right?
Right.
But he's playing for his career. And I'm 1,000% certain if he screws this one up somehow with that, no one in the entire league will touch him after that. So if I'm the Browns, I try this. I wouldn't have said that 6 months or a year ago, but things are in such dire straits with that team and franchise and organization that beggars can't be choosers, if you will.
I don't disagree because of the circumstances they find themselves in right now. That's point number one. Point number one is that because they are so awful, they have nothing to lose. If they were even remotely contending,
right.
No way.
Yep,
you
I agree
with
that.
Don't mess around with this. But since you have nothing to lose except for your jobs, because they're all going to be out, as you point out, the way things have gone, you know, if they go 1-15 again, or 0-16 or something stupid,
they'll all be fired January 2nd or 3rd or whatever the day after the last day of the season is.
So why not? Why not just, roll the dice and bring him out and see what happens? So I get it. Number two, though, you were talking about his contract status. He'd be a restricted free agent.
Oh, he'd be restricted.
Year.
Okay, I was unaware
that's
of that.
That's what I have as I've taken notes on him, is that he's a restricted free agent, so he would still be under their control. If somebody did want to offer him a contract based on what he can do for a few games, it would be up to the Browns to match it. I don't know what that would be. I can't imagine it would be very much. Nobody is going to put a ton of guaranteed money in a big long-term.
Even if he goes out and plays and lights it up in those five games, I can't imagine a big contract coming his way.
Probably something with a ton of guarantee, or excuse me, a ton of incentives
in it,
as opposed to guaranteed money. And he would have to just say, okay, deal, because I'm in
no position
to negotiate here.
Right. Yeah, he's in no position to negotiate. And that's an interesting twist. Okay, I'm glad you pointed that out, because I guess restricted free agency changes that just a little bit. But not a ton, because as you pointed out, I think correctly, even if he is able to play and even if he lights it up, any contract that gets thrown his way is going to be very little on the guaranteed side and very heavy on the incentive side, on the grounds of, well, you actually have to be able to play for us and not get popped for another test while you're at it.
From the punishment side of things, Kush, you spoke to it from the Brown side of things,
okay.
But from the punishment side, do you agree with Booger, who said he's had opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, he shouldn't be in the NFL? He's essentially saying this guy's blown it time and time again. It's not just a matter of what's good for himself or what's good for the Browns, but from a fairness standpoint, he has had time and time. Let me hear that part again if I can't hear just that first part from Booger McFarland.
Most, because I don't think Josh Gordon should be in the National Football League. I think Josh Gordon has had so many opportunities going all the way back to his collegiate career. I mean, opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, and he's failed at all of them. And I think he needs to get his life together.
There it is. I mean, he's had opportunity after opportunity, and he needs to get his life. And he's right, going back to college, going back to Baylor. Then, then when Baylor booted him,
he tried to play for Utah.
A scholarship at
Utah, I believe it was.
At Utah, yes, Utah. And, you know, then he found out he was going to have to be tested there. So he's like, screw that, I'm going to get busted again. So he waited for the supplemental draft, and we know where it went from there. So from the punitive standpoint, it sounds like Booger said, you know what, bro, you ran out of chances. Go do something else with your life. You've had plenty of chances. But as Booger said, and I think it comes better from a player than it does from the mouth of a talk show host like me, to hear Booger say, you know what, man, I don't think you belong in this league. You haven't earned the right to be in this league because you've blown so many chances.
And, in the vast majority of situations that could possibly come up, I would wholeheartedly agree with Booger McFarland and his assessment and what he said. The thing that makes it a little different, which is why I'm on this, and maybe I'm being a little partisan on this, maybe, I don't know, but it's the specific circumstance of this incompetent franchise that has the small potential of having an actual talent accidentally fall back in their lap. And given their situation specifically, they have to look into it, where pretty much every other NFL team would say, we're done with you. We've been done with you for a couple years now. Because most other organizations are, what was the word Bill Polian used the other day? Professionally run. This one, as we know, is not. And you have to take every little advantage that might come your way, and this is the most accidental that could possibly be. And that's why I still maintain that the Browns need to look into this. And I think they are, on the grounds of, since he was formally reinstated Wednesday afternoon, about 48 hours ago, I haven't read one thing that suggests the Browns aren't going to do anything or do anything. So the fact that they haven't come out one way or another leads me to believe they will bring him in.
I think you might be right. And again, from the team standpoint, I can understand it. But from the punitive standpoint, the fairness standpoint, the whatever standpoint, I'm on the same page.
Yeah, I am too. This isn't about fair getting more chances. In the vast majority of other situations in the NFL, he would have been bye-bye already, but these are the incompetent Browns.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, Kush, since we're going to talk basketball here in just a couple of minutes, what do you say we get our wild stat?
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day, last night in the Rockets, 27-17 win over Northern Illinois, an outstanding win, by the way, and a big win against a team that's been a pain in the butt for UT. Logan Woodside threw for 361 more yards, and in doing so, became UT's all-time passing leader. In school history, with 9,288 yards and counting, that surpasses Bruce Gradkowski, who threw for 9,225 between the years of 2002 and 2005. By the way, when I was on a different Toledo radio station and really enjoying watching Bruce, this is terrific for Logan. Also of note, running back Terry Swanson is now the seventh player in Rockets history with 3,000 rushing yards for his career. So those are your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stats of the day. All right, we'll get a bottom of the hour local sports center coming up here. Then we'll come back and we're going to talk a little NBA basketball. Why do the Cavaliers suck? Rick Noland is going to explain it, or try to anyway, coming up right here on the Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We're definitely struggling right now. We will struggle at some point throughout the season. I think it's surprising to all of us that it's happening right now, but hey, it is what it is, and it's exciting to see how we can turn this thing around. It's a combination of us not playing well as a team, us not playing well as individuals, us having seven new guys as well, me missing training camp for the most part, and not being able to lead the group like I've grown accustomed to doing. So it's a little bit of everything.
We're rolling on, we are. We are rolling better than the Cavaliers are, that's for sure. The big air it all out team meeting that happened before the Indiana game didn't have the impact or effect that perhaps Tyronn Lue or LeBron James or anybody else thought that it might. You heard LeBron there. You heard Dwayne Wade saying this reminds him of how they started out the 2014 season that they had in Miami. They still made the finals last year, but he says they shouldn't have. Indiana should have beaten them. He said it just didn't work. And it's not working now. The only difference being that they all knew each other there, and these guys are all new. But that's a very interesting comparison. What does it mean? Well, let's ask Rick Noland. Rick Noland is on the Cavaliers beat, joins us now from Cleveland to talk about the Eastern Conference defending champions, who don't look anything but champion-like at the start of this season. Hey, Rick, how are you?
Much like the team I cover, I'm feeling old, slow, and having a hard time getting motivated. But we'll get through this.
Well, you know what, my man? That's excellent, by the way. You don't have to be fast because you can type that thing as slow as your little arthritic fingers can carry you to get your columns done and to get your game stories done and your side stories or sidebars. But they kind of can't afford that. They can't be as old and as slow as you are. They've got to get back on defense, and they do have to show motivation. Is it okay to not be motivated because the season started earlier, and it is October, and they all know this doesn't mean squat in the grand scheme of things?
Well, you're right with that, and they've proven that the last 3 years by just sailing through the Eastern Conference with a 36-5 record in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning of this year, I through the first three or four games of this current slump, I thought it was just simply a matter of lack of motivation, of going through the motions, of just working harder, would solve the majority of their issues. But I'm beginning to think it goes deeper than that, because maybe they're incapable of playing at the pace that many of their opponents are. Maybe they are trying and they're just not physically able to get out to the three-point line. I thought they gave a decent effort the other night against Indiana, but there was never really a point, even though that game was not a blowout until late, there was never really a point where I felt like they were going to win it. And it's getting to the point where it's not even considered, an upset on one night. They do this on a nightly basis. They've lost four in a row and five of six, and Ty Lue has said that they're not in shape. Well, I can understand maybe LeBron not being optimum, but what's everybody else's excuse? I think there's legitimate reason for concern here, and there's a lot of reasons for it. The pieces parts just don't look like they're meshing real well. They have a lot of guys who have attached their level of play and whether they're playing well or not to their ability to score. And I'm talking about Wade, Korver, JR shooting the ball. Even Jeff Green has been a pretty decent scorer in this league. Derrick Rose.
Double-digit career average, yeah.
Yeah, what they don't have outside of Tristan, who was fairly awful before he got hurt, and Jay Crowder, who they really haven't seemed to figure out how to use. Outside of those two guys, they have a serious lack of whatever you want to call them, blue collar, dirty work, type of players who are going to do those little things that allow your marquee players to excel in the scoring department. They don't have enough guys that will knock people down. They don't have enough people who can defend individually. They don't really seem to have too much of any who are committed to playing defense on a consistent basis. And then you add in the fact that Ty Lue seemed a little overmatched with all the options he's had. It's not entirely his fault. They're going to use their sixth lineup in nine games tonight. Small minor injuries have played a role in that. But when you have a team that's this old, those small minor injuries are going to crop up on a fairly consistent basis. So they have a lot of things that they've got to figure out. And I'm not totally convinced that they're going to get through the Eastern Conference right now. Certainly not the way they're playing now. And if they don't get a healthy, almost as good Isaiah Thomas back sometime in January, then I think this run could come to an end. Now, the thing they have in their favor is Boston lost Gordon Hayward, even though they're playing extremely well right now. They're still going to be as good as anybody on paper, but they got to start figuring out a way to get all that to translate into some on-court success.
Particularly on the defensive end, as you talked about, being able to close out on shooters, which they've never been great at, and they're particularly bad at now, given their age and their speed and the way they're just not communicating. So, Rick, I want to go back to something Ty Lue said a few days ago, and I don't think I got a chance to pick your brain about it, when he said he thinks some of these guys have a hard time playing with LeBron. Then when you're playing with greatness, when you're playing with somebody who's used to doing this, that, or the other, you're a little intimidated by it. I think that was the word he used, they're intimidated by playing with him, and they need to know that LeBron's a very giving person, and he doesn't want all the shots, and they can go ahead and be themselves and be scorers and this and that. LeBron's not going to get upset, but he thinks they're deferring to him too much because he's LeBron. And some of the new guys who haven't played with a guy like LeBron before don't get that. Do you buy that, or is that just an excuse?
First of all, it kind of makes you appreciate Kyrie a little bit more, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Because he was able to find individual success while playing with LeBron. He's never been one of my personal favorites, but I'm starting to have a little more respect for him from a basketball standpoint after watching the latest guys try to gel. I think there's some truth to what Ty Lue said, but what he was saying basically was they tended to defer to LeBron a little bit. And I'm not saying this is LeBron's fault, but he's a hard guy not to defer to because he has the ball so much during the course of the game. Derrick Rose had a pretty good game the other night. He had 19 points, but he had one assist, which kind of makes Kyrie's five or six look really good.
Right. when you're a scoring point guard, which Rose is, and obviously Kyrie is and was with this team, it's and you have LeBron, who is also a great playmaker, and he oftentimes finds the right guy and gets the assist. It is tough, and yet you're starting to see some of that with Derrick Rose. And you know, I don't know how it's going to be when Isaiah gets back, because he's obviously a score first point guard too, but will he be able to find that balance between setting other guys up and scoring his 29 points a game the way he did in Boston?
Well, they better hope he does, because right now they don't even have another point guard on their team besides Derrick Rose, unless you count LeBron, because Jose Calderon has played himself completely off the map. There's issues. You can even go to, I gave JR huge benefit of the doubt last year because of the injury and some things going on to his in his personal life, but he just seems to be collecting a paycheck. He doesn't have a whole lot of fire. He's shooting the ball horrendously bad. excuse me. Dwayne Wade looks a lot older than 35 all of a sudden. And I think one of the big Jeff Green has actually shown some signs of life, but it's been inconsistent. He'll have a couple real good games, and then he'll have some invisible ones. And I think, Bob, a lot of this goes back to the fact they're trying to play nine guys, and they were trying to play 10. But it's hard to get into any kind of rhythm or role when you're playing basically half the game. Outside of Love and LeBron, this is a team that has a lot of guys averaging in the low to mid-20s in minutes played or high teens. And they really don't seem to have any, real delineation of roles or responsibilities or strengths or weaknesses. You never know what you're going to get from a lot of these players from one night to the next, and that's not a way to build good habits and get on any type of role. And most troubling, or right up there at the top among the most troubling, is, they've played some really awful teams in this stretch too. And they've played them at home, and they're getting annihilated in the first period of a lot of these games. They only were behind by two the other night, which was a moral victory, but in their last six games, they've been outscored by 56 points in the first period. So they're playing uphill the entire time.
In their five losses, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Rick, in their five losses, they're losing by an average of 16.5 points a game.
Yeah, and that's with a couple in Brooklyn and New Orleans that were actually a lot more lopsided than the final score showed. If you didn't have names on the uniforms, or know who the players were individually, and you were just watching these games, you would think that these other teams are just better than the Cavs. And they have been for the most part. Now, I think they'll get better, but I'm starting to worry, whether this current group has the right mix.
Let me ask you this about that mix and about making it work. Obviously, the coach is Ty Lue, but LeBron, and you and I have talked about this before, LeBron often refers to his teammates as my guys. I'm going to get my guys, and we're going to do this. My guy's going to do that. I'm going to have my – he's the leader of this thing, and he gets all of the credit or an extraordinarily large amount of the credit when they are awesome and when he is awesome. How much of the leadership or lack of it falls to LeBron on this in not making this mix work, especially with the Ty Lue part that we mentioned, where he said some of these guys are not used to playing with a guy like LeBron and they're intimidated, and up to LeBron to make sure that they know to not be intimidated, that he expects them to be themselves, that they don't have to worry about pleasing him, blah, blah, blah. How much of this is communication on the part of LeBron, leadership on the part of LeBron that just isn't there right now?
Well, I mean, I think he's got to accept a certain amount of responsibility for it. And I think he has in some ways. We talked the last time I was on, I think it was about, was it LeBron's decision or was it Ty Lue's decision to start Kevin Love at center?
Correct.
Well, regardless of whose it was, they gave that like three or four games and then they changed it. And things only got worse. you put in a guy in Tristan Thompson who played 19 minutes and had one rebound, no rebounds and no assists against a really bad New York team. LeBron's the guy at the top of the food chain as far as the roster. I think he and Ty Lue have to share in some of this, and the rest of it is players just aren't playing well. They're on top of not defending at all. They're not making shots, and not making shots makes the defense even more glaring. LeBron's been pretty good.
He's playing other than his personal numbers. On the offensive end, you're right, but it's mostly the offensive end.
Yeah, and I don't know that if you have the opportunity to see this on TV because you don't get a wide view, but there's at least once and often twice, often two occasions in every game where LeBron or one of his teammates makes a turnover, and LeBron doesn't take more than two steps towards the other end of the court while the other team sprints 5-on-4, often 5-on-3, because he usually has company. And just standing there and watching, and it ends up in a dunk or a wide open 3-pointer. It happened at least twice in the Pacers game the other night. It happened in the Knicks game. It's nothing new. He's done this, you know, in previous years, but, you gotta set an example. He's been as guilty as anyone, and so has Kevin Love, of getting to a shooter above the three-point arc, and then just standing there while the guy just raises up and shoots it as if he wasn't there.
Right.
So, he's asked out of a handful of games this year because he's become exhausted. And a couple of those times have only come, 7 minutes into a quarter. So that does lend credence to the fact that he's not in optimum shape, and I don't have much worry that he will get there in that regard. But that's leading to a lot of minutes on the floor because that's the only way they think he can get in shape. So they're kind of in a vicious circle right now, where, they have a lot of players who look good on paper. But really there's holes on this team. You would have thought going into this year that JR and Dwayne Wade would make a pretty decent 1-2 punch at shooting guard. Well, they've both been lousy for the most part.
Yeah, I thought when they put Wade to the bench, and I talked about that a little bit with you before, it was, in my opinion, a little self-serving. And he said, I think I should go to the bench, and I think he knew he was going to go to the bench because of the way he was playing anyway. Ty was going to pull that trigger, so we beat him to it, and it looked good for him. But at the end of the day, I thought it would help, and I thought JR being back in that familiar starting role would be JR again, but he has played awful too. So neither one of those guys are doing anything. Hey, I've only got 4 minutes left, Rick. Let me get to the other part of the story that you might not want to talk about, because as you've admitted, Kyrie Irving has not been your favorite guy. And certainly on his way out the door, the couple of verbal shots that he took about the sports city of Boston and blah, blah, blah. Not a lot of Cavs fans like him either. But boy, and you did this already, you started to anyway, really give him some props for, A, how well he is playing right now and how well Boston is playing without Gordon Hayward. He is indeed doing what he said he wanted to do, and that is lead his own team and not kind of little brother anybody. And so far, anyway, it's very, very successful. And number two, as you pointed out, we're starting to see how valuable he was to this Cavaliers team with this new mix not being able to blend with LeBron. You're right. You said it a few minutes ago. Boy, a really new appreciation for how well Kyrie could play the game using his talents to mix with LeBron to win basketball games that they're simply not winning now.
Yeah. As much as I was not a fan of his personally, I told everyone when the trade was made that, Isaiah Thomas is pretty darn good. But he's not as good as Kyrie Irving. And, I mean, anybody who really follows basketball should know that. Things go beyond the numbers when you're with scoring averages and assists. And that will be proven out, I think, when Isaiah comes back, because his numbers will go down considerably, even if he is 100%. And that's a big if. But, yeah, Kyrie, nobody questioned his ability to score. He did that for 4 years before LeBron got here. So, they're winning, and you know, he's been a large part of that. The Cavs, I think, would be really, really worried if Gordon Hayward were still playing, you know, if you're looking long-term towards April and May. I think they still believe that, that they will get everything together by then and still win the East. But the gap is closing, and, you know, I actually thought this was going to be – I'm starting to question my own knowledge of the sport because I thought this was going to be a pretty good team. Here in Cleveland, when the, I mean, a lot of these additions are quality players, but they haven't been on a consistent basis, and they haven't added up to a quality team. And I don't think there's a button that's going to be pushed where that automatically happens, because I think this is going to be an entire year of guys suffering knick-knack injuries, and that's what happens when you have guys who are 32, 33, 34, 35 years old. And when basically your organization from the top is kind of adopted for 3 years to let's be safe rather than sorry approach, and kind of unintentionally sends a subtle message down the chain that the regular season doesn't matter. Just be healthy for the playoffs and everything will work out then. And, you know, it did once. So you got to say there's some, you know, knowledge in that. But I think when you have this many pieces, it shouldn't be too much to ask to play hard and play intelligently and at least develop good habits and try to make those good habits great habits as the season goes on. And I have seen virtually zero of that so far this season.
Rick Nolan kind of sounding the very early season alarm for us from the Cavaliers beat on the way that they're playing. The Wizards get their next crack at the Cavs tonight. Rick, thanks so much for the analysis, my friend. I hope you have a nice, slow, calm, restful weekend filled with not getting back on defense very quickly. And
sounds good. I will stay right on my recliner where I'm at right now.
Attaboy. That's the way it ought
to be. All right. Thank you,
my man. Rick Nolan joining us. So what we're going to do here, top of the hour Sports Center coming your way, then we're going to shift gears into a little NFL football. Josh Gordon has been reinstated. Lions have a big Monday nighter. Richie Incognito hates Thursday nighters. Andrew Luck is out for the season. Deshaun Watson is out for the season. Lots of NFL storylines to cover up with Adam Stites, who joins us next from NFL, the NFL side of things on SB Nation, coming up after SportsCenter right here on the Ticket.
We have a long way to go defensively. If we was at our best defensively and they was tagging us like this, then it'd be red alert. We got to continue to get our coverages down, our communication down. And that's just in half court. I ain't even talking about transition, which, you know, last night we gave up, I think, 30 points of transition. That last year in Miami when we went to the final, I don't know how we made it. As a team, we was kind of like this. It was worse because we were new guys. It was guys that have been around each other 4 years in a row. Guys was just over you. It's like being in a bad marriage. We somehow made it to the finals, and Indiana should have beat us that year.
We're talking about an individual that was gone before, and after receiving banishment, was allowed to come back, and then before the season began, had to reinstate himself into a rehab clinic because of these issues. Anything that will help the guy, I'm supportive of, but he's had these issues on the books since 2012. He hasn't played in a game since 2014. In the time that he's been away from the Cleveland Browns, they've been 4-37. He's wrecked this franchise, and it comes down to reliability, dependability, and he hasn't been available. It's conditional for a reason.
You know, it's tough, man. These Thursday night games, they throw a wrench in our schedule. It's absolutely ridiculous that we have to do this. As physical as this game is, and as much work and preparation that goes into this to force us to play games on four-day weeks, it's completely unfair. The league makes money off of it. That's all they care about anyway.
Obviously a devastating blow to a city that now, in the span of 24 hours, celebrated its first World Series championship and now loses the quarterback who was leading the NFL in touchdown passes, who had brought a jolt of energy to the NFL, who had provided a distraction in a year where the NFL needed one. A player who not only was competing for the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year, but also, I think you can make the argument, could have been the MVP.
He's seeking an injunction, and he's also seeking an expedited hearing in front of a three-judge panel, the appellate court, to basically try to overturn what that district court did. So this essentially pushes it to next week, pushes that motion for an injunction and also that request for that expedited hearing to this three-judge panel. They'll hear this case, but now the timing becomes interesting because, yes, he plays this weekend, but the question becomes, what does this appellate court do next week?
Sometimes injuries can be self-induced, not by Andrew Luck, but by the coach. They've surrounded this young man by a miserable offensive line, by pretty much a terrible supporting cast. The number one thing in football you do, when you get a franchise quarterback, when you get Aaron Rodgers, when you get Tom Brady, you surround them with players. They've not done that with Andrew Luck. And so in my opinion, yeah, it can be bad luck, but a lot of it can be self-induced by the organization for the lack of support they put around this young man.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, hour number two is underway at 13 minutes past 4 o'clock. Thanks for being with us. A really good conversation on the NBA with Mr. Nolan last half hour. We're going to shift gears to football, all in the final hour of the program, NFL style and also college style. I want to start with the college game simply by reminding you that the time is running out on the Border Battle Contest. It is a coming at us like a freight train. The ticket in Yingling with a chance for you to go to see the Ohio State-Michigan game up in the Big House in Ann Arbor on November 25th with limo service from Total Image Limousine. If you don't win the big prize in the Border Battle Contest, you could win the runner-up prize, which is a trip for two to the Big Ten Championship game at Indy at Lucas Oil on December 2nd. Just register now at 1065theticket.com or text the word Border Battle to 64636. If you qualify, you will attend the giveaway party Thursday night, November 16th. See, I told you it's coming at the Blarney downtown. It's all brought to you by Yingling, True House of Munch, Get-Go Transportation, Churchill's, Country Hearth, Tyus Electronics, Distracted Haunted House, and your football freaky friends at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. So a little college football note there. We also talked a little bit about the Rockets' big win last night over Northern Illinois. They continue to steamroll through their MAC schedule, which is outstanding. Only loss on the year thus far down at Coral Gables at the U. And now we get back into the NFL with our friend Adam Stites, who writes about the NFL for SBNation.com. Adam, good to have you back on the air here in Toledo. How the hell are you?
I'm doing all right. How about you guys?
Oh, great, man. Really, really good, except for the teams that we cover kind of are struggling in a big way. The teams that our fans root for are in a bad way right now. The league is in a bad way with the loss of stars like Deshaun Watson. Other than that, just freaking ducky. So Adam, let's start there with the local teams. The Lions got their season off to a really, really good start at 3-1, and most people thought, wow, this is a powerful team that could be not only a threat to go to the playoffs again, but to maybe win a game and do some damage. Then, three straight losses, 4 out of 5. As a matter of fact, Atlanta, Carolina, New Orleans, and Pittsburgh all wrapped around one win over Minnesota. What is, as we approach the break of the season, the halfway point of the season, your read on the Lions?
I think last year it was a team that won a lot of really close games, and sometimes that just, it's just not really a sustainable thing when you're putting together game-winning drives week after week. And so I think it's just the same kind of issues that they had last year. They're just not winning those close games that, you know, Carolina came down to the wire. You know, Pittsburgh even was a close game. They had plenty more offense than Pittsburgh did and just weren't putting points on the board. So it's still a lot of the same issues. They still can't run the ball. The defense isn't that great. And I think a 3-4 record is probably indicative of the kind of team they are.
You know, I think that's sad to say, but true, because I feel like some of the things we saw earlier on were early on. You know, they were a little, you know, the really great pass rush. They were getting after quarterbacks a little bit. They were running the ball with Amir Abdullah better than they had really all last year without Amir Abdullah, certainly. It was a great counterbalance to Matt Stafford. And now it just seems like some of those things, have gone away. And they're in a very precarious situation now. They got the Monday nighter against Green Bay. Normally, going to Green Bay is just a death sentence for the Lions. We know how they've been at Lambeau. But without Aaron Rodgers, what do you think on Monday night? Can they go in there and get a win against Brett Hundley and the Green Bay Packers?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the good news is that November's a pretty easy slate. And Green Bay, you know, going to Lambeau is always tough. Brett Hundley now had a bye week to kind of adjust to his role as a starter. I'm not convinced that he's, you know, that great of a starter at all. So I think Detroit has a good shot, and I think they'll pull off the win there on the road. But going to Lambeau is never easy. But after that, you know, it's Cleveland, and then it's Chicago. So there's a good chance they could put together string together some wins and get right back into the thick thing.
You mentioned the C word, and nobody wants to talk about the C word, which is, of course, Cleveland, the embarrassment that they are, the worst franchise, I still say, in all of professional team sports, not just in North America, but probably around the globe. It is just a comedy of errors, not only on the field with the constant lack of talent that they put out there, despite having countless numbers of high draft picks in the last several years that they've blown time and time and time again, to the way their head coach yo-yos his rookie starting quarterback to Sean Kizer and then expects him to play well with confidence, to the front office, which can't even engineer a trade properly before the trading deadline with the Cincinnati Bengals as they tried to overpay with a 3-2 for A.J. McCarron. It really is a comedy of errors. Have you ever seen a team run this poorly that wasn't an expansion team? And they were an expansion team. I guess this could be excused in 99, 2000, 2001. But where they are now?
The only one that comes to mind is maybe the Jacksonville Jaguars of the last decade or so. But like you said, they didn't really have the Three Stooges kind of act going on where they were messing up trades at the deadline, things like that. So, yeah, it's an odd situation because, you know, back in April there were so many nice things being said about this franchise, the way they drafted, the way they were picking up picks. And so really, if they were winning, I think a lot of these things wouldn't be looked at so badly. But obviously when you lose, everything that you're doing, you have to raise questions about. And it's just, yeah, I don't think you're off base at all when you say it's a terrible franchise right now.
Should they blow it up in your opinion, Adam? Should they just, and I know the one thing they've been criticized for the most is instability. You know, you look at New England, you look at the teams that are successful on a very, very regular basis, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, the likes, they're stable. The front office stays put, this coaching staff stays put. If you have a lean year or two or three, even sometimes, although those teams really haven't had many of that because they draft well, but the stability matters, whereas the Browns turn over the front office, turn over the coaching staff, over and over, the quarterback over and over again, and instability is your enemy. But having said that, this particular regime, with Sashi Brown, a lawyer with no GM experience at all, with Paul D. Podesta, a baseball scout trying to apply the analytics to football, they've had 24 draft picks. They've acquired 24 players in the draft of the last 2 years, and there may be one impact player among them. It's not working. Do you think they need to blow it up?
I don't think I do. Maybe that's giving these guys more credit than they're due, but it does feel like the defense is getting better. That defensive line they've accrued a lot of talent up there. I think it was a long-term project from the beginning. They've really focused on picking up a bunch of draft picks. And you're right that they haven't made a giant impact yet, but they've also just had kind of some bad luck their way. You know, how are you supposed to anticipate, you know, the Joe Thomas injury or Corey Coleman, you know, struggling with his hand and things like that. So, I think I'd give them another shot at one more off season to use all these picks that they picked up. I mean, it was this regime that picked up these draft picks. So I think, you know, it was part of their plan and I let them take one more crack at this.
We're talking Adam Stites, SBNation.com, NFL writer. Adam, let's talk about the league as a whole. Deshaun Watson, it's maybe shiniest new toy. Every bit of Michael Jordan that his college coach, Dabo Swinney, said he would be. Just lighting the league up, putting up crazy numbers, just doing spectacular things with his arm and his legs. Non-contact, very similar to Teddy Bridgewater. Non-contact, just planted wrong in a play in practice. And knee blows up. His season is over. Chances are the Texan season is over as well. How about that? Has anybody ever lost the caliber of J.J. Watt on one side of the ball and Deshaun Watson on the other side in the same season on the same team? Just a terrible blow for the league.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad for everybody. It's sad for Deshaun Watson, who's just a really easy guy to root for. the Texans, which, you know, just they went through like seven or eight horrible quarterbacks in the last 3 years and finally found their guy, and they got him for six games before this happens, and now they're going back to Tom Savage. And that's what's sad for, you know, just NFL fans in general, is that the Texans are an exceptionally boring team when they have Tom Savage in there. He still hasn't scored a touchdown. So, it went from being one of the most exciting teams to a team that, you know, you'd probably rather miss. There's no reason to tune into Texans games now.
Adam Stites is our guest from SBNation.com. He is an NFL writer. Jim Cushlin is alongside me. And Cush has got a question for you, Adam. Go ahead, Jimmy.
And, you know, one of the other things, talking about injured quarterbacks, the other one, of course, this week was Andrew Luck. He's had his surgery way back in, I want to say it was January sometime, and they were trying to hold out hope, were the Colts, that he would be back this year. That's obviously not going to happen. They put him on IR this week, so much so that Andrew Luck even had to more or less say, no, my career is not in danger. What's the future for Andrew Luck? Are we going to ever see the same guy again?
I hope so. That's another one where you don't want to lose an exciting football player. I think the problem was that they just waited so long to have that surgery. This injury was suffered in September of 2015, and then he had the surgery 16 months later after playing, you know, basically two entire seasons on it. You know, he had other injuries too, but that shoulder was never right, and it was always a problem, and they waited until after two seasons of him playing on it to go get that surgery, which they said was a minor surgery, but I think that's gotta be what the problem was, is that he played on a messed up rotator cuff for a long, long time, labrum, sorry. And so, yeah, it's just, I think he probably will get back there. Shoulders don't tend generally end careers or anything like that. But yeah, it was just a really poorly handled situation by Luck and the Colts to allow that to fester as long as it did.
Adam Stites is our guest, talking about all things NFL. Richie Incognito went off. We had it in our montage there. I don't know if you heard it at the top of the show or if you're on hold yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe you heard it, you're on your own. Richie Incognito blasting the NFL's decision to keep playing these Thursday night games, saying it's unfair to the teams and to the players' bodies to ask them to play on a Sunday and then have three days off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before suiting back up for another one on a Thursday. I got to tell you, I kind of agree. I don't agree with his complaint, which was, well, he said something to the effect of, but the NFL is making money on it, so I guess that's all they care about. Well, of course that's what they care about. It's how you get paid, by making more money. It's why you're a multimillionaire. But I don't agree with that part, but I do agree with his point on Thursday night being bad for the teams, bad for the players, bad for their bodies, etc. Does he have a right to gripe, and is it something you think they'll address when it's time for a new CBA?
I don't think it'll get addressed. Like they said, it makes a lot of money. It's a chance to kind of shoehorn in another primetime slot that they can sell to, you know, CBS or whoever else wants to come in and buy those rights. So I don't think it's going anywhere, but, yeah, he definitely has a good complaint. He's not the first one to do it. You know, Richard Sherman had this problem. Arian Foster said the same thing. Dwayne Brown. There's a long list of guys who have put the NFL on blast for this, and nothing's changed, and I would be really surprised if anything changed with the new CBA. It's just it's too. Anytime the NFL can throw in another time slot, they will. And so, yeah, I don't think they're going anywhere. But it is, and I think it's the big reason why Thursday games generally in the last few years haven't been good.
Right.
The players aren't ready to play. So, yeah, it's just not a good formula, but I mean, as long as it's making money, you know, like he said, it's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, I think you're right. It has hurt the quality of the games over the most part for the last two or three years. This year they've had some pretty exciting games, actually. There have been some entertaining games on Thursdays, but it's the aberration. It's the exception, not the rule. And I don't like it personally. I think Incognito was right. If you're looking for the best games, let the guys rest. And if you're looking to extend careers, again, let the guys rest and play the games once a week. To me, I always used to think, boy, I feel bad for the team that plays on a Monday night, because they got to play then on Sunday, you know, with less rest. Even though they had more rest the week before, it doesn't change for the body. And
And to do it on Thursday, I think it's just insane. I think Incognito's got a point. Last thing for you, if you could, Adam Stites, tell us your opinion of the Josh Gordon situation. Berger McFarland on ESPN kind of echoed my thoughts when he said a couple of days ago that Josh Gordon doesn't deserve another chance. It's not necessarily about what's best for him, but how about the fairness factor? How about the punitive factor? I'm going to let you hear this.
I look at this situation different than most because I don't think Josh Gordon should be in the National Football League. I think Josh Gordon has had so many opportunities going all the way back to his collegiate career. I mean, opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, and he's failed at all of them. And I think he needs to get his life together and prove that he can have his life together consistently, not just for a year at a time when you can go get back in front of the commissioner and say, hey, look what I've done in the last year. Prove that your life can be on the straight and narrow path for a long time.
So that's Berger McFarland's point. Is like, look, this isn't second chance territory anymore. This is sixth, seventh, eighth chance. Reminds me of Steve Howe back when we used to make fun of Major League Baseball. How can a 7 or 8 time drug loser like Steve Howe continue to get cleared to play in Major League Baseball? And that's what Josh Gordon has become to me. This isn't second chance territory anymore. Is Booger right? Does he deserve a chance to play in the NFL after blowing so many opportunities?
He has a point. I personally disagree with it. I think, you can only punish a guy until for the mistakes that he made. And if the rule is a 1 year suspension, then it's a 1 year suspension. I don't think.
Well, but that wasn't the rule. It wasn't a 1 year suspension.
He had
an indefinite ban. It was a flat out ban. Right. A suspension has a start and an end. A ban is indefinite. He had to apply for reinstatement to make it end, and he did. And this time around, the commissioner said okay, conditionally.
Sure, but how long are we going to wait? Are we going to wait? I mean, he's an athlete in his prime. He's 26. We wait 3 years until he's 28, and then hope that he has a shot at playing again. I don't know that he did anything malicious. It was he blew his chances. He was irresponsible. But if he has proven over the course of a year that he's made the steps that it has to put his life in the right step in the right place, then. I do think give him another shot, and if he blows it again, then he blows it again. It's on the Browns at that point. If the Browns want him to be on their team, they're the ones taking that risk. I don't think the NFL should be the one.
No, I mean, him being reinstated does not give him a job. You're right. A team has to decide whether they want to play him and sign him and pay him or not. You're right about that. But let me ask you this, to your point. Is there a time ever when it's too many chances now? In other words, if he comes back and then gets popped again, and he goes back under the suspended or the indefinitely banned list again, and then gets cleared again. I mean, are you okay with him getting cleared each time he screws up and each time the commissioner says, okay, one more time?
Yeah, I think I am, because, I think it's on the teams to decide whether or not they want to, risk bringing him in. I think the NFL... They could do another indefinite ban, and then maybe they wait another 18 months and before they decide to bring him back, or 2 years or whatever. But it just gets harder and harder for teams to trust him. So, yeah, I don't know that he even really makes an impact with the Browns, or if they keep him around very long. But I'd rather it be on the teams, be on the, than they actually ban them from the game itself. I think the market should just decide whether or not teams want to take those chances on their own.
If you were, what if you were running that clown show in Cleveland? Would you bring him back? Would you pay him? Put him on the roster? Put him on the field?
Yeah, I would, and mostly because it would just really, really help. He's exactly the kind of player they need. Deshaun Kizer needs some help at receiver, and Josh Gordon would instantly be their best receiver if he's anything like he was before.
He'd instantly be the best player if he's anything like he was before.
Yeah, definitely. And then
void of talent. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And it's not like he's making a ton of money either. It's not like they're relying on him, financially, and they're going to be wrecked if he isn't good. It's still a pretty light contract, and if he gets another one, it's not like they're going to throw heaps of guaranteed money at him. He's scheduled to become a restricted free agent in the offseason. It wouldn't be hard to bring him back for cheap. And I think, if I'm the Browns, I see what I've got in him.
Adam Stites laying it out for us as he sees it from from SB Nation, where he writes about the NFL. Follow him there at SBNation.com. Adam, we really appreciate the time always when you talk NFL football with us. We enjoy it, and we look forward to doing it again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Adam. Have a great one. All right, there you go. Adam Stites joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. I told you it was going to be pretty much all football in the second hour of this Friday program. We did some basketball in the first hour. And it's going to stay that way because coming up, our regular weekly segment at about this time on Friday, and we talk high school football with Bill Clark. The best part about this particular time, we're not talking about weeks 1 through 10. This is when it's for real. This is when you lose, you go home, not just look forward to next week. This is the time when seniors' careers come to an end. Every week when you're in the playoffs, you're playing for your career to be extended, and that's the beauty of it all, and that's what the conversation is going to center around when we talk with Bill Clark coming up here, actually when Jim Cushlin talks with Bill Clark coming up here in just a few minutes. So I'll tell you what we'll do on our way into the Bill Clark conversation and on our way into the bottom of the hour local sports center. How about we also hook you up with something we've been doing all week? You want to go see Joe Bonamassa November 27th at Stranahan Theater? We've got a pair of tickets for you if you would like to do that. Be caller 5. Right now at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, and we will set you up with the tickets. Joe Bonamassa, Monday, November 27th at Stranahan. Local Sports Center coming your way. Then Bill Clark talks Week 11 high school football with Cush right here on the Ticket.
Eastbound Alexis at Douglas. There's an accident there. Left lane is blocked. Also Alexis at Lewis.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back we are here on this Friday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin filling in here these last couple of minutes before we turn it over to drive time. And not Mike Miller, but myself, Jim Cushlin in for Mike Miller. He'll be north of the border on a hockey assignment for that. When we talk some basketball, we mentioned a little bit of Josh Gordon being reinstated and all that fun stuff. And then talk a whole bunch of NFL, thanks to Adam Stites for stopping on by. Now it's time to talk to high school football, and it's week one, or round one, depending on your point of view, of the playoffs all around the state of Ohio. FYI, it's round two up north of the border in Michigan. And as we always like to do every Friday at about this time during the high school football season, we once again welcome him. He's the voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan. Oh, and the only Bill Clark joining us back here on the Extravaganza. Good Friday playoff afternoon, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Cush. How are you?
Hey, can't complain. This is one of my favorite high school football weeks, you know, of the year, because the most teams will be involved playoff-wise in this round one, especially in the region before the field keeps getting smaller and smaller. And there's a ton of interesting, fascinating matchups. Let's start with the one that you'll be out at, Division III, Region 10, over there at the Gallagher. 7 o'clock, by the way, the coverage time for the 7:30 kickoff, followed by the final edition of the high school score. Board show, by the by, all here on the Ticket tonight. Central Catholic, they got the number one spot at 8-2 in this Region 10. They'll be hosting Cleveland Glenville. A lot of Northeast versus Northwest Ohio matchups in this. Central gets Glenville, who's 7-3 in the 8th spot. They get them at home. First and foremost, though, Bill, are you surprised that the Irish enter this playoff season with multiple losses? I haven't seen that in a little bit.
No, it's been a while since they've lost two games in a regular season, that's for sure. But, you know, they played a tough Whitmer team. They played them tough, but Whitmer took advantage of a couple of turnovers and took it into the end zone. And last week against St. John's, the Titans were able to make some plays when the Irish couldn't late in the game. I mean, the Irish were inside the red zone 6 times last weekend, but just could not convert except for 1 time. So, you know, that's in the rearview mirror now. Talking to Coach Dempsey this week, he told the kids, you know, you seniors are lucky you get a chance to play one more game at the Gallagher, and you don't want that last game that you'll be playing at the home stadium to be a loss. This is the 14th straight year that Central's hosted a first-round playoff game. So they're used to doing it. They don't have to travel on round one, and it's not a huge advantage, but it is a little bit of an advantage talking to Coach Dempsey, because he said the kids can kind of stay in their same mode. Even if they have a road game in the track, it's not driving 2.5 hours to play it. So they can keep their same routine, so that makes it a little bit easier, while Glenville has to hop on a bus, come over for 2 hours and can kind of get loose and go to play. So it's an advantage, I think, to be home, but you're still going to have to perform once the whistle blows.
Yeah, and this is one of those situations where you hear the name even out here in Northwest Ohio, Glenville out there in Cleveland, think, I know that's a solid, solid team, but they come in this year as the 8th seed at a 7-3 for their mark. Obviously, being playoff action, it's going to be a little bit different than, say, a Week 7 game. And obviously Central's at home, which, as you mentioned, I agree, that's a little bit of an advantage. But what can you tell us about Glenville's 2017 version, if anything?
Well, Glenville, obviously, as you mentioned, has been a powerhouse, Kush, not in Northwest Ohio, but in the state of Ohio for a long time as far as the football team goes. Ted Ginn, people are pretty much familiar with him. Ted Ginn Jr., his son, played at Ohio State, went on to play in the pros, but he's been there since 1997. And they've turned out some pretty good teams and some pretty good players as well. This year, if you remember 2 years ago, Springfield played Cleveland-Glenville in the first round of the playoffs when Glenville was Division II, and Springfield handled them very easily. I'm not sure that's going to be the case tonight. They've dropped down to Division III. But the one thing about this team, they played a kind of a tough schedule early. They lost to St. Ed's. They lost to Euclid rather handily, and they lost the third game as well. And then they got into their league, and they went through the entire league at 7-0. Their only win, though, of those seven against the team with a plus 500 mark was last week against Cleveland Rhodes. All their other wins were against teams that haven't even got to the 500 mark. So when you take a look at that, and again, when you talk about a team playing from the other side of the state, you don't really know the competition. I mean, those teams could be very good, and they just continue to beat each other up. But in most cases, the coaches know what the other teams are going to do. It doesn't make any difference what part of the state you play in. Coaches will find out either from other coaches or from their own scouts what this team is good at and what this team is not good at. They've got a quarterback that's pretty good passing the football. He's also pretty good running the football. His name is Xander Spikes. He's a senior. They've got a couple of running backs that the one running back, they say, is 5'8". I would like to put him under a yardstick because I think he's about 5'6". And they got a huge offensive line that this little kid just kind of hides behind these tree trunks and just decides to find a little crack and make his move. So the defense for Central Catholic is going to have to come up big, which they've pretty much done all year. The defense, as we've talked each and every week, has been the star part of this football team. The offense has struggled at times. Jace Bowen, obviously, they're moving him a little bit more, kind of as a quarterback a little bit, but he hasn't thrown the pass yet. They run him a lot out of the wildcat. Troy Durden still trying to get a little confidence passing the football, and that's going to be key when you get into the playoffs, because if a team finds out you can't throw the football, they're just going to load the box and make you beat them on the ground. So you've got to have some passing offense. But, again, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little off tangent. As far as Cleveland-Glenville goes, I mean, this is a Cleveland-Glenville team. It's going to be a big group of linemen. It's going to be, I think, a knock-em-in-the-face kind of football game. And as it always comes down to, especially in games when it's one and done, it's going to be turnovers. And if you create a turnover, you've got to do something with that football. The other side of that coin, Kush, is if you do create a turnover and you can't do anything with it, you can't let the other team come back and get some momentum even after they gave you a turnover. So it's going to be 48 minutes of football. There's no doubt about that. It'll be interesting, but I like Central's chances. I mean, they've been here. This is their 19th postseason. They're 28-15 overall. They've got a couple of state titles, as everybody knows. Not a couple. They've got a few, which is three. They've got a state runner-up. They've got some regional championships. Glenville's been in they've won two state championships as well back in 2009 and 2013. So their playoff test, there's not any rookies in this particular game as far as getting into the playoffs. So it should be an interesting game. I'm thrilled that it's at the Gallagher and see if these seniors can go out on a win.
Do you see them going out on a win? And what would be, obviously, because as we know, round two and beyond are all neutral sites. Will Central Catholic, in your crystal ball, Bill, end up winning this game tonight?
I really do think they will. I think the last week's game against St. John's, talking to the coaches on Tuesday down at practice, the kids were extremely upset with the effort they put out. I mean, they just had a chance to score a couple times, and they didn't do it. So they're kicking themselves in the butt a little bit going into tonight's game. And, again, the fact that it's at home, these seniors want to go out on a high note. So, yeah, I'll give Central the nod. They're home. And I think the offense will start to come around. The defense will continue to play like they are, which is going to be tough tonight because this is a, as we said, a big Glenville team. But I'm going to give Central the nod.
We're talking with Bill Clark, voice of high school sports here in Toledo, Northwest Ohio, here on the Extravaganza. He'll have the call along with the rest of the crew starting at 7 o'clock for the pregame, 7:30 for the kickoff, and then that'll be followed by the final edition, if I'm not mistaken, Bill, of the high school scoreboard show to give you all the scores from all these playoff games here in the area, all that here on the ticket later tonight. Speaking of one of the other games in the area, another 1-8 matchup. Let's go to Division I. What an outstanding season for the Whitmer Panthers. Unbeaten. They get the home game. They get the top seed in their particular region in Division One. They get an 8-2, 8-seeded Lorraine squad. I definitely like Whitmer, at least in this first game, to advance beyond that. But again, if nothing else, what an outstanding tip of the cap season to the Whitmer Panthers, the track champs this year.
Yeah, they've done a great job. Every game, they've pretty much been in control. Young Riley Keller is really not young anymore. He's finishing up his sophomore season, and he's pretty much as good as advertised. And the other skill position players that Ken Winters has at his disposal, they've played very well. They've got the track championship in their back pocket for the first time since 2011. So they're ready to rock and roll. So it's interesting to see this Lorraine team, what they can do. Again, it's Northeast Ohio, as you mentioned earlier, Kush, coming over to Northwest Ohio, and with an 8-2 mark, it's tough to find out just exactly how good those 8 wins were. I mean, should they have been 10-0? Should they have been, 5-5? You don't know because you don't know the competition that well. I'm sure Coach Winters and his coaching staff knows what the competition is, but when you get a Cleveland team coming over, they're normally pretty good. But I don't see Whitmer stubbing their toe. I think Whitmer's poised right now to make a huge run in the playoffs in D1 this year.
And we'll certainly be following if that's the case, if the Whitmer Panthers can make a run, especially considering it's in the Division One, the top division in the state. Let's go to Division Two, Region 6. 3 of the teams in our area, 1 track, 2 NLL teams, but they're all on the road. Let's start with St. John's. They got the 8 seed. They squeaked into the playoffs at 6-4. Do they have any shot at 10-0, Avon?
Yeah, I think they do. And again, I think some of it comes off the way they played last week against Central Catholic. It wasn't, St. John's is not one of those teams like, oh, we're just glad we got in the playoffs and we're not going to worry about that. I mean, Harry McDaniel, the first year coach, has done an amazing job with these kids. Their young quarterback, Brady Lichtenberg, had a good game last week against the Fighting Irish. He's playing very well. Dallas Gann on his way to Ohio State had a decent game last week as well. So it's, I think St. John's, it's going to be very tough for them to win. If they win, it wouldn't surprise me, but I would think on the fact that they've got to go to Avon. Avon is 10-0. They're playing very good football. You'd have to give the edge to Avon, but it certainly wouldn't surprise me if St. John's pulls the upset.
Let's go to the 5-4 matchup in this particular region. Anthony Wayne, the 5, so they're on the road. Despite the 9-1 record at Medina Highland, 8-2, what do you see in this one?
I think I'm not going against Anthony Wayne. I think Andy Brungard has these kids playing at a very high level. They made a deep run into the playoffs last year, so these kids aren't worried about the glow and the glitter of the playoffs. I think they're ready to play some decent football. It will not be an easy test. Again, going on the road, Medina is a very good football team, as you mentioned, but the fact is, it being at 8-2 and 9-1, it was only percentage points. If you look at the way the computer ended up between Anthony Wayne and Medina, Anthony Wayne could have very easily had a home game just with a few percentage points if the building blocks would have fallen a certain way. But they have to go on the road. And when you get to a 4-5 matchup, Kush, you know this in the NCAA tournament or whatever, 4 and 5 are almost identical.
Yep.
So the fact that Medina is at home might give them a slight edge. But in this case, I'm going to take the Generals because I think they're playing really good football. I would be surprised if they got beat tonight.
Yeah, and they certainly have. There's no question what a nice season the Generals have had. Let's go to the third game in this Division II Region 6 involving a team in the area. Another tip of the cap type of season for the Northview Cougars. 8-2. They get the 7 spot, so they're on the road at undefeated Wadsworth. But, hey, it feels like just not too terribly long ago, it was Southview we were giving the props to, and Northview is at the bottom of the standings. Now that's kind of reversed, and Northview's back in the playoffs.
Yeah, Northview's playing very well. Doug Downing is in his fourth year out with the Wildcats, and the kids that are playing for him right now, with the exception of his quarterback, Brandon Leach, who was a transfer in from Canada, most of the kids that he's got playing at a high level have been with him for 4 years. And this is quite a reward for these kids who have played so hard, who have bought into the program at Northview, to get themselves a playoff berth in their senior season. I think they're going to have their hands full tonight. I really do. It's going to be very tough, I think, for them to move on. But, you know, again, if they come out and do what they're supposed to do, limit their turnovers, they've got the skill position kids to do what they need to do. But I just think it's going to be kind of a tough task for the Wildcats tonight.
And thank you for pointing out the Wildcats. See, I still have the Southview thing on the brain right there, calling them the Cougars. So my bad. Don't anybody from Northview yell at me. I want to go to Division 5, Region 18 next, because in that region, five of the eight teams are in our listening area. Swanton, Eastwood, Otsego, Archbold, Genoa, all in action, all in that very same region. I want to start with the 1-8. That matches up Swanton 7-3, Eastwood undefeated this year. That feels like it should be a more interesting ball game than the seeds and the records might indicate, because, you know, Swan's had a good last couple years, made the playoffs. Eastwood, what an outstanding season they've had. What do you see, first of all, in that game?
Well, I can't see Eastwood stubbing their toe at this point. They're number one in the state. They're 10-0. Swan got in with a big win last week. Liberty Center got beat, so they unfortunately fell out of the race.
Right.
Swan more than happily jumped them to get into the playoffs. And again, you mentioned Swan's been in the playoffs before, so this is not one of these teams that goes, oh, we just got into the playoffs, we're thrilled to be there. Whatever happens tonight happens. I think these kids are going to come out and play hard. But I just think Craig Rutherford's key team is firing on all cylinders, and I would be very, very surprised if Eastwood didn't win tonight.
Let's go to the 2-7 matchup in that region. Genoa on the road, 8-2 they went this year. They got the 7 spot. They're at Pleasant, who went 9-1, and that means to me the question is, we know how good Genoa has been, the Comets, over the years in the regular season, only to have their toes get stubbed in the playoffs. Are we staring at that again?
Yeah, there's a real strong possibility that could happen. Noah Edwards, the tremendous running back for Genoa, is going to have a huge game. And you can bet that Marion Pleasant has been game planning against Mr. Edwards all week. I mean, the kid had 427 yards last week and 7 touchdowns. So if they can slow him down, Genoa is going to have a long night. But Paul Patterson told us on the coaches show last week that his kids are ready to rock and roll. You're right. They get into the playoffs and they have kind of a quick exit. But this team, he said, is a little bit different. They've had some really tough injuries, but they've overcome those injuries and continued to play very well. As you mentioned, so many local teams are in this Division 5. It's like familiarity breeds contempt. There are no secrets, you know, with Eastwood and Swanton, obviously Marion Pleasant a little bit out of our area with Genoa. But everybody knows everybody. So it's one of those deals. And when we had all those coaches on our coaches show last Monday mm-hmm. night, they were thrilled for each other. I mean, they just think it's great for Northwest Ohio to have as many teams from the two leagues, the NWOAL and the NBC,
yes.
who are going to go in Division 5 and continue to play great football.
And but that right there is exactly why out of this particular region, 5 of the 8 from this listening area. One more matchup as I'm running out of time. Let's stay in this Division 5, Region 18. The 4-5 toss-up matchup, both teams 8-2, but it's Otsego who's on the road at Edison. And I remember not too terribly long ago, it was Otsego at the bottom of the standings. Now they're here in the playoffs.
Yeah, Matt Girwa, he's in his fifth year running things out for the Knights in Otsego, and we also talked to him, too, on the coaches' show. His kids are fired up and ready to go. This is the first time they've been in the playoffs since 2006. It's going to be a tough task because Milan Edison is very, very good. But you know what? Let's throw caution to the wind and say Otsego steals one in the first round.
I like your thinking on that one, Bill Clark. Bill Clark taking the time, breaking down some of these playoff matchups, and he'll be behind the microphone for one of them. Central Catholic taking on Glenville. 7 o'clock the coverage time, 7:30 the kickoff, followed immediately after the game broadcast by the final edition of the playoff edition, if you will, of the High School Scoreboard Show. So we got all the high school action for you tonight. Thanks so much, as always. Bill, have a great call. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet, Coach. Thank you.
And that's going to do it, by the by, for this edition of the Extravaganza on a Friday. High school football tonight, college tomorrow, NFL on Sunday. We recap it all on Monday, but stick around. One more hour of fun talk, Drive Time, with yours truly, Jim Cushlin, in for Mike Miller. That's coming up next. Stick around for that.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.